Schlagbaum.
Willkommen zu einer neuen Folge von Schlagbaum, dem Zoll-Podcast aus Münster, der sich mit den Themen rund um Außenhandel, Zölle und Außenwirtschaft beschäftigt. Das brennende Thema ist derzeit die Zollsituation in den USA. Seit dem 2. April 2025 herrscht eine gewisse Unsicherheit zu der Frage, welche Zölle und Zusatzzölle die USA auf Waren erheben werden. Im Gespräch sind zusätzliche Zölle von unglaublichen über 100%. Das ist aber nur ein Teil der Rechengrößen. Die betroffenen Länder, allen voran China, aber auch die EU haben Gegenmaßnahmen in Form von Gegen- und Ausgleichszöllen in ähnlicher Höhe beschlossen. Die Maßnahmen der EU sind derzeit noch ausgesetzt, es finden derzeit Verhandlungen statt. In dieser Ausgabe werden wir versuchen, ein wenig Licht in die derzeitige Situation zu bringen, die sich bei Einfuhren in die USA darstellt. Dazu haben wir einen besonderen Gast eingeladen, Peter Kliestedt, einen Attorney at Law aus New York. Im Interview werden wir die aktuelle Situation der US-amerikanischen Zölle beleuchten, welche Auswirkungen sie auf den internationalen Handel haben und welche rechtlichen Herausforderungen sich dabei ergeben. Wir geben Hinweise, welche Fragestellungen von den Unternehmen zu prüfen sind, um zulässigerweise Zölle zu reduzieren. Das Interview datiert auf den 22. April 2025 und ist erschienen als Videobeitrag im Rahmen einer Update-Veranstaltung der Pasani Akademie München. Mein Name ist Ulrich Möllenhoff, Rechtsanwalt aus Münster. Bleiben Sie dran für spannende Einblicke und praktische Lösungen aus erster Hand.
The US President has been keeping the international trade world in tenterhook for several weeks now. New and more complex additional tariffs have been announced, introduced, suspended and in some cases even cancelled with retroactive effect. As you said, it seems to be a rule. All of this is done by presidential decree, which is announced in speeches to great media effect and implemented immediately. However, most of it was ruled without parliamentary involvement on the basis on emergency regulations. Possibly parliament will be involved in future. Some regulations can have been found in tweets or other information from the customs authorities. This makes it even more difficult for us and for you, of course, to apply it. The only thing that seems certain here is nothing can be predicted with certainty. Everything can change at a very short notice. Therefore, I think it's important that we say that we record this today on April 22nd. This is the situation for today, and what happens next days and what kind of news may come up next days, something we'll see. There is also no clear picture on the part of the countries concerned. With the exception of China, the countries concerned have adopted countermeasures and have since suspended them again. The European Union did so this month and postponed countermeasures to July. Most governments are focusing on talks and hoping for a negotiated solution. As far as I see it at the moment, India is in negotiations today and others will come next days. The companies affected are extremely irritated. There is currently no planning certainty, which is so important for the companies. Many companies have suspended their deliveries to the USA and currently do not know how existing delivery obligations can be organized and implemented in a legally correct manner without harming their own company. Economists are forecasting major economic damage for both US companies and the EU. Despite this devastating situation, we are not at the end of the story, I fear. New tariffs on certain products that are currently exempt have been announced. Many measures and countermeasures have currently suspended, and nobody probably knows what the situation will be at the end of this suspension. I'm particularly pleased to provide an overview here with my dear friend Peter Kliestedt, attorney at law based in New York. Peter, you are a partner in the New York law firm Grundfeld, Desiderio, Lebowitz, Silverman & Kliestedt. Based in New York, you have specialized in customs and foreign trade law for many years and advise clients not only in the USA, but also in Europe. Your clients come from all industries and concern the sizes of companies. A warm welcome to you, Peter. How nice that we can exchange ideas this way. We know each other through our joint umbrella organization, Consulegis, an association of law firms specializing in commercial law all over the world. And as I already said, we do more or less the same on the both sides of the Atlantic, customs and foreign trade, and therefore, let's see what the situation is at the moment. Would you like to give us a brief overview of the new regulation, Peter?
Thank you, Ulrich. I appreciate the introduction. So obviously, there's a lot happening in the United States, and it changes almost daily. So we can update you as of today and do our best to give you clear interpretations of what has come out. But largely because these announcements or pronouncements come out so quickly, there's a lot of clarification that's still required from the government. So I'll try and point out where things are not absolutely black and white as I go. So on April 2nd, President Trump dubbed it Liberation Day. I'm not sure what he meant by that, but he announced these reciprocal tariffs pursuant to the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, IEEPA, as it's commonly called. And that gives the president the authority to unilaterally impose tariffs and take other actions if he identifies that there's a threat to the U.S. economy. So he announced these reciprocal tariffs on April 2nd. He had a schedule of individual rates by country. The EU, as most people know, was 20%. Switzerland was 31%. China started at 34% and since scaled up. But then effective April 9th, he issued a pause where he brought all countries, with the exception of China, Mexico, and Canada, down to 10%. And that's where it stays until July 8th. He is also, in the last several weeks, the administration has imposed what are called 232 tariffs for certain product sectors. And he's also started 232 investigations in others. Notably, steel and aluminum and their derivatives have been assessed a 25% tariff. Other targeted industries which can expect tariffs in the future include lumber, pharmaceuticals, semiconductors, and critical minerals. And autos and auto parts were recently announced. So there's a lot happening that run parallel with the reciprocal tariffs.
Those tariffs are mainly in place, aren't they? Because the European Union tried to set up countermeasures, not tried, they set it up actually by regulation, especially the steel and aluminum tariffs, but they paused in order to do a negotiation with the US. The pause is postponed, I think, to the mid of July. This matches, I think, that there are negotiations in future. As far as I know, at the moment, there are no negotiations running between the U.S. and the EU.
I think Ms. Meloni from Italy was in the U.S. meeting with Trump yesterday. They announced some agreements regarding digital service taxes and things like that. So, you know, there are discussions ongoing. There's no question about it.
Yeah. When do the regulations, this is the overall question, when do those regulations apply?
Well, the regulations apply to all goods imported on or after April 9th, April 5th, unless they're eligible for what's called an in-transit exemption. The in-transit exemption is worded in kind of a funny way. It says, loaded on a vessel and in transit on its final mode of transport before April 9th. It only refers to vessels. We're seeking clarification from U.S. Customs and Border Protection whether it will be applied to air shipments, for example, that left April 8th and arrived on April 9th. We don't know. But for the moment, the plain language seems to say it had to be on a boat, and it has to be imported and entered, meaning declared through customs, by May 27th.
Okay. Another question which arises by reading through all the very complex regulations and announcements, we talk about additional tariffs, right?
Yes. So the reciprocal tariffs stack on top of certain other tariffs. They stack on top of the normal rate. So if you're importing a machine that was formerly subject to a 3% tariff rate, it's now the 10% plus the 3%, so a total of 13%. So they do stack. There are certain exceptions to the stacking rule. One is these 232 tariffs. The executive order specifically said that if a product is subject to a 232 tariff, such as steel and aluminum, then the reciprocal tariff doesn't apply. You only apply the 232 tariff. So that's kind of a strange anomaly that might get tightened up in the future, because what's happened, if you take China as an example, China is the perfect example of stacking. So you have a normal duty rate, let's say it was 10%, just to use easy math. And then back in 2018, 2019, he imposed what were called 301 tariffs, which generally were 25% or 7.5%. Let's use 25% as an example. So now you're up to 35%. In March, he imposed 20% IEEPA tariffs relating to fentanyl. So now you're up to 55%. And since April 5th, he scaled up the reciprocal tariff to another 125%. So you're up to 175% tariff. So they all stack up on many products from China. So, you know, it depends on the type of tariff. Anti-dumping duties or countervailing duties also stack.
Okay. It's unbelievable.
I know, it's a lot to keep
at the end. It doesn't really matter whether you talk about 150 or 175. Nobody would do it anyway.
But with China, it's very difficult.
Okay. What is about origin of goods? This is another question many companies have. I think they look to the non-preferential origin description as it is used in customs questions anyway, don't they?
Yeah, well, U.S. Customs has a completely different test for country of origin. It's called substantial transformation. Mm-hmm. So it's where through a significant manufacturing process, a new and different article of commerce is created. And it's somewhat subjective. It's not based on a value test or anything like that. Value is a factor, but there are many factors that can determine it. So the reciprocal tariff applies based on the determined country of origin of the product, not on the country of export. So, you know, even if you took a Chinese product and sent it to Europe for reshipment to the U.S., it's still a Chinese product subject to the in that case, the China reciprocal tariffs and all the others.
Mm-hmm. And what about this Harley-Davidson judgment of the European Court of Justice we already talked about recently, in which the court decided that changing the place of production only for customs reasons would not lead to a new tariff situation, but would qualify as well for the countermeasures?
Well, it's interesting. Yeah,
would that apply in the U.S. as well?
Well, it depends, is the answer. So for changing the duty rate, whether it be the reciprocal tariff or the normal MFN, most favored nation tariff rate, change in country of origin is absolutely permitted. And there's an extensive body of administrative rulings and case law that support that. So, and it often leads to very, you know, unintuitive results. So just one example, if you have a water pump and you take, you produce the impeller in China and you send it to Europe, where you then assemble that impeller. The impeller is what moves the water around. You assemble it in Europe with the motor, a casing, all the electronics, et cetera, and finish it in Europe. U.S. Customs says, well, the country of origin of that water pump is the country of the impeller, because that's what gives the water pump its essence and its main functionality. So you get some crazy results. So everyone's case is a little different, and one should look at it, but it's absolutely a strategy that companies should be exploring based on their, you know, individual products. It's a little different with regard to anti-dumping. With anti-dumping, there are anti-circumvention rules, and that lines up a little bit more with the Harley-Davidson EU analysis, because there the idea is that If you have an anti-dumping case order against one country and the production moves to the second country, the anti-dump, there's a proceeding to ask for that anti-dumping to be applied to the second country. It's a little different. Doesn't make it illegal, but it means that you're not out of the woods.
Okay. Yeah, the rules of origin are quite difficult under European law as well, and those exemptions which you mentioned exist under EU law as well. So it's always a question of individual situation. And
yeah,
individual
they just don't rights. Align with each other necessarily. So you always have to look at the US customs rules separately.
Absolutely. But what about the parts of US origin installed into a good? Is there a kind of discount, so to say?
Well, there are exceptions to these reciprocal tariffs, and one of which is if it's if you can have a claim under Chapter 98 of the Harmonized Tariff System of the United States. And so one of the provisions is 9802, which allows for foreign assembly of U.S. or even foreign components that are exported from the U.S. abroad. In that case, you only have to pay the duty on the value added abroad. So you'd get the credit for the U.S. components in that case. There's also, as part of these reciprocal tariffs, a brand new provision that says if the product, the finished product, contains more than 20% by value of U.S. components, then you only have to pay duty on the added foreign costs. You get a credit for the U.S. value. I would note that the provision uses the word components, and again, we're seeking clarification whether that would apply to raw materials, we don't know, or whether they really mean, you know, manufactured components. Very unclear. I should hope that includes raw materials. So that's another viable option for some people.
Yeah, I think you mentioned that already. The processing procedures are something which may be important. This outbound, inbound processing route, which we have under EU law, do exist under US law, but differently. Refer to 9801 and 9802 tariffs. But this may be an option as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, clearly, if you take a U.S. product and work it abroad, and even if you do not qualify for any of the Chapter 98 provisions, as long as you haven't substantially transformed it, it still is considered a product of the U.S. So the simplest example I can give you is if you take a diamond engagement ring and you cast the setting in the United States and send that setting abroad and set it with $1 million diamond and polish it and finish it, U.S. Customs considers the country of where the casting is made to be the country of origin of the finished ring. So that ring would then come in as a product of the U.S., not eligible for any, possibly not eligible for any of the Chapter 98 provisions. But if in the worst case, if that's the worst case, you'll just pay the normal duty rate as a product of the U.S. on the entire value, but not be subject to the reciprocal tariffs. It's a very popular solution for China at the moment.
So, okay. But it's connected to different and additional regulations, is it not?
You have yes,
to
correct.
Put in structuring into...
It depends on what type of program you're putting together. So if you're sending components or so forth out, you want to register them on the way out. There is a procedure for that so that you have to have traceability to establish that what is coming back is still the same thing or part of the same thing that you sent out.
Yeah. Let us look to the contractual part. Many companies ask, what do we do with our contracts and fixed pricings, etc.? Do your clients think about ideas of frustration of contract, force majeure, et cetera, all those more or less soft regulations in contracts to get into new negotiations would be fully on the line on your president to do a deal. But I'm sure that contract lawyers will see it differently. Is it a big argument, and is it something which is accepted under U.S. law from your point of view?
Yeah, it's something that's not regulated by federal law, but it would be regulated by individual state law. I mean, generally speaking, you know, the terms of the contract govern. And, you know, in my experience, for example, with force majeure clauses, if the language is general and just says acts of God, et cetera, that may not be specific enough to cover, you know, these type of tariffs. If, on the other hand, they specify tariffs and companies should look at their force majeure clauses or insert other clauses that actually specify changes in tariffs. You do see it in certain industries now because, for example, with anti-dumping, you see it in the solar industries. Everyone has known for quite some time that solar is prone to, you know, very steep anti-dumping cases once these anti-dumping duty assessments, once these cases unwind, and a lot of those contracts have very specific clauses to cover it. So again, it depends on the terms of the contract, but it certainly is a viable possibility and one should look at it.
Exactly. And it's always dependent on the applicable law. Right. Whether we have German law, which is under European contract law, or whether we have US law or any other different set of regulations. But I think it's absolutely worth looking into it. And even if the situation may be difficult, it is something to withhold a delivery, which is done by many companies, in order to force into negotiations in this situation. This is what is done by many companies at the moment, but always a legal danger on it, of course, yes. Overall, what are your recommendations on that? If you would put it on a whatever half a minute advice for the companies, what to do, the first aid kit, so to say.
Okay, so you know, there are three kind of maybe four classic areas that companies should look at. You know, the first being, I mean, tariff classification, but tariff classification may help you for some of these 232 tariffs because they're specific tariff numbers that fall into those tariffs, but it won't help you for reciprocal tariffs because reciprocal tariffs are across the board countrywide. So tariff classification only has marginal benefits here, but it should be considered. Clearly, restructuring transactions to reduce the dutiable value is a very important strategy that companies should look into, particularly between related companies. There are opportunities to restructure transactions to lower duties. One needs to be careful about just shifting the responsibility for the tariffs to the, let's say, the European exporter or parent, because you may end up reducing the transfer price to a point where U.S. Customs would reject it under their related party transfer tests. So one has to be very careful to regulate pricing. There may be other strategies. We have a concept called first sale, which Europe had years ago, but the U.S. is the last country standing. Hopefully President Trump won't attack that either. But it basically says that if you have two sales in a row that bring the goods to the U.S., so let's say U.S. subsidiary to parent, parent subcontracts to a producer, you might have two sales and you can use the earlier sale as the basis for customs valuation, eliminating the middleman's markup, and, you know, which includes profit and indirect overheads.
So this is interesting. The first sale rule still exists and would be applicable on that.
Still standing.
Very good.
You know, other strategies we call unbundling. If, for example, the parent company or the exporter in this case is also paying a royalty that's built into the price, there are ways to restructure that royalty to take it out of the dutiable value, because royalties for trademark and copyright can be structured to be non-dutiable. Patent royalties are a different case. There might be alternative basis of valuation. So value is a very rich area that companies should study. Origin, as we discussed, shifting country of origin to the extent that production capability or certain operation production capability for certain operations exist in second countries, that could be a viable strategy as well. And finally, you know, using bonded warehouses in the United States, you can import into a bonded warehouse, defer the payment of duty, and not pay the duty until the date the goods are withdrawn from the warehouse into the United States. So if you believe that these tariffs will come down or go away, then you could theoretically get the benefit if that happens in the interim. Of course, it can always go the other way as well. I should note that foreign trade zones cannot be used to reduce the reciprocal tariff exposure. And of course, you know, shifting production to the United States is the stated objective of these reciprocal tariffs, but, you know, that may not be viable, particularly if you can't get the raw materials and components in the United States, because then you'll just have to import those as well. So,
exactly. You know, and the time scale, you don't know what's the legal situation like once you start your production in the US. This is, I think, the biggest problem at the moment. Right. And we're really talking at the moment about first aid questions and not about what could be done in a year or two or three or whatever. But yeah, of course, this is, I think, the idea behind it, why all this is done. I think this is fully understandable, though from the European part of the world, I'm a bit of a different opinion, to be honest. But anyway.
Can understand.
Yeah.
I'm sympathetic.
Many thanks, Peter. This was very, very interesting. Thank you very much for that. May we finally invite all the people listening to us to our conference in May. We meet together on this Consuliges network of lawyers in Switzerland, in Luzern, on 22nd to 24th of May. And on the 23rd, we'll have different panels all around trade issues, customs issues. We both will meet on a panel again and discuss then the up-to-date situation then. We'll be
sure it'll
joined.
Change by then.
Absolutely, they may have changed. And we will discuss that with the participants, with people from China, from India, from Hong Kong, all lawyers and company lawyers. On the Friday, on the 23rd, it's open to the public. So if somebody would like to attend this conference and meet lawyers from around the world, I think this will be one of the biggest issues on this conference. Then 23rd in Lucerne, you'll find that on the Consuliges webpage, or just an information to you and me. And we're happy to follow up on this discussion. Thank you very much, Peter, for that. It was very, very helpful. Thank you.
Soweit mein Interview mit Peter Kliestedt. Drei Aspekte nehme ich mit. Es ist nach wie vor unklar, welche Zölle tatsächlich nach den jeweiligen Aussetzungen der Regelungen auf beiden Seiten des Atlantiks gelten werden. Zweitens, Gestaltungsmöglichkeiten für Unternehmen bieten sich vor allen Dingen im Bereich von Zolltarif, also der Frage, welches ist die richtige Zolltarifnummer, Zollwert, die Frage, setzt man die richtigen Werte an, kann man gegebenenfalls die Werte bereinigen, Ursprung, wo wird die Ware produziert, wo stammt sie her und wie viel ist der Anteil US-amerikanischer Waren und Zollaussetzungsverfahren, also die Frage, ob man passive oder aktive Veredelung nutzen kann. Drittens bedarf es einer Betrachtung der individuellen Verträge. Für bestehende Verträge müssen Unternehmen möglichst schnell in Verhandlungen mit den Vertragspartnern eintreten, um eine Regelung für Einfuhrabgaben zu finden, die bisher so nicht einkalkuliert waren und die Wirtschaftlichkeit des Geschäfts bedrohen. Umso mehr gilt dies für noch zu schließende Verträge. Hier sollten passende Klauseln gefunden werden, die diese Situation berücksichtigen. Wenn Sie Interesse an einer Teilnahme an der Consuliges-Conference in Luzern am 23. Mai 2025 haben, wo wir auf verschiedenen Panels, auch mit Peter Kliestedt und mir, diese Fragen mit Anwälten aus verschiedenen Ländern der Welt erörtern werden, gibt es weitergehende Informationen auf der Homepage von Consuliges. Ich verlinke dies in den Shownotes. Ich hoffe, dass Sie wertvolle Informationen und Einsichten über die aktuellen US-Zölle gewinnen konnten. Vielen Dank, dass Sie bei dieser Folge von Schlagbaum dabei waren. Wenn Ihnen unser Podcast gefällt, abonnieren Sie uns und lassen Sie eine Bewertung da. Bis zur nächsten Folge. Wir werden Sie mit unserem Schlagbaum weiter auf dem Laufenden halten. Mein Name ist Ulrich Möllner, Rechtsanwalt in Münster.